curses. Later on, when we take phone calls, has anybody put a curse on you or your family? We're going to get into more curses in a moment with Linda Salvin on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Salvin with us. So, Linda, we talked about generational family curses, curses that are put on through the years.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some individual curses now. The person who wants a curse on another person. Now, does the person who is tossing the curse on you, do they understand this, how it works, or are they just saying it?
I think there's two different ways to answer that. I feel that there's those that are trained or understand enough from the metaphysical or the occult world on how to really tamper with somebody's energy or lifestyle. And then there's those that are the novices that learn something on the internet or through word of mouth or somebody at school, and they think they're tossing a curse or a negative ritual, whatever, onto somebody. And it could be coincidental that if somebody, like, oh, I want Johnny to fail his math test, you know, I mean, I'm so mad at him because he went out with Susie, that kind of thing.
I've heard,
you know, the kids. And all of a sudden, Johnny's having problems with school, and the girl's thinking, oh, gosh, you know, my spell worked. And it may have nothing to do with it except coincidentally it happened that way. When there's somebody that's professionally trained with how oils or petitions or anointing of different elements work to really offset somebody's path, I think they can be of danger and really cause some difficulty. I've seen animals die, pets get sick and die, where relatives have gotten sick out of the blue. Business ventures that were supposed to be extremely successful, everything is going fine, and the rug gets pulled out from underneath for no explanatory reason. I've seen people who have suffered unbelievable health issues, which might be either from a curse that may have come down the line or because of tampering with something, and in turn it's like their karma being paid back that they suffer. I think there's different ways of handling it and experiencing it, but to answer your question, it depends on the level of wisdom and knowledge as to what somebody's actually doing that they can cause harm.
Let's talk about two different versions of individual curses. First of all, the person who's cursed, they don't know that they've been cursed.
Only if they are unaware as to how energy works in life. Because most people are not, the people that listen to your show, for example, are more attuned spiritually. They're more open-minded, and they're curious about what makes life work on a metaphysical and spiritual level. The average left-brain, cognitive, corporate-structured, white-collar person thinks all this is hogwash and is a skeptic, is not going to understand anything, and yet they may have something done to them out of jealousy, or that their stock should go down, or that they lose the new position they're up for, you know, for millions a year or whatever. There's competition. But they're not going to say, oh, I've been cursed. That's not part of their vocabulary. They don't understand that. They wouldn't even think that way. They would think it's bad luck or that something out of the blue is happening and they're trying to understand what they have to deal with. But they come from a more practical, cognitive opinion, and yet the people who are aware are going to use the word curse, hex, misfortune, negativity, and all of that. But I think when people put curses on others, they have to sacrifice a part of their own livelihood in order to pay back
sure.
what they're doing to harm others.
We'll talk about karma in a second. But those then who do know they've been cursed, how do we know it's not mind over matter? How do we know that they don't psych themselves out so much that they drop it? You know, I was always told, for example, as a parent, don't go up to your kid who's holding a little cup of milk and say, don't spill your milk, because you're creating that episode, that environment in that kid, and he spills it.
And he spills it. So is it mind over matter? I would have to say I used to think it was mind over matter that you feel cursed, therefore everything's going to go wrong. It's like, you know, the action and reaction. But then why do the Kennedys, let's use the Kennedys again, why would so much trauma take place? Why were there so much death in my mom's family? Why is there so much negativity? No, I'm not talking about the wars and all this. You can say the whole planet's cursed. You know, we're here to learn lessons. But on an individual level, I think those that experience it, who have awareness, are going to feel something's not right or there's a discomfort, and they're trying to seek out the answers to what is this that I never used to feel like this. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're cursed. Yes, it could be psychological. Yes, it could be biochemical. It might be the retrograde because there's negativity in the retrograde. There can be other conditions, but when it comes to severe actions or limitations where you just know, like, this is bigger than your average everyday struggle. We all struggle.
Sure. Now, we hear a lot about karma.
Yeah.
And that what you give, what you sow, you reap, basically.
Yeah.
And so karma will bite you if
it's
you're
fun.
Doing negativity.
Yeah.
And if you're a good person, it comes back that way, too.
Yeah,
is
like
that the case?
Bank. Yeah, like a karmic bank. You like if you're picking up garbage when you're walking the dog bin, you've just banked a coin of karma for the day because you're cleaning up the environment, or you're being super nice to somebody that's in a wheelchair at the market that can't get through the door by yourself.
That's right.
So that's karma. If you're going to wish somebody ill and dead, or go get the candle oils that will create destruction. See, I won't even sell them. If somebody wants to curse or destroy, let's say...
Well, they're not going to tell you that, are they?
Well, I have to ask them what they want to purchase them for so I know what I'm selling. So somebody, a single woman is dating a married man and she wants to break up his marriage.
Okay.
I will not sell her the formula to do that because I don't want the karma.
But there is a formula to do that.
There is a formula to break it up, but I will only sell the man or the woman in the marriage that particular set. If they want out of their marriage, that's different. But I'm not going to contribute to breaking up what's not, which may not be God's will, just because the girl who's having the affair.
What if somebody comes up to you, Linda, and says, I'll give you $1,000 for this curse. Come on. I need it. I need it.
No.
You won't do it.
I hold my principles. It's not worth it to me because I live a very professional lifestyle, and I take my work very seriously, and I don't want to tamper with anything out there that I don't understand.
Good for you.
Ghost hunts, and I've been scared by the ghosts. I've seen them and experienced it. And when it comes to paranormal, there's some real negative, heavy stuff out there, but that's not where I go. It scares me.
$1 million.
Nope. It's not worth it to me because something
standing
is
your
happen.
Ground. Good for
something
you.
Will happen to me if I do. Something will go wrong in another area of my body, because if I took the $1 million from you, that's greed. I'm not in this for greed. Okay, it's just like people say, well, what are the lottery numbers? Or can I go to Vegas? Can you give me the numbers for Vegas? What machine's going to win? I said, you know, if I knew all those answers, I wouldn't be working as a psychic, you know? But if I knew what the lottery numbers were, but that's not how this works. That's not how it works at all. You know, people want me to heal glaucoma and neuropathy and heart valves, and I'm not a witch doctor. I'm not a faith healer, and I'm not a physician. I'm a metaphysician, which understands the emotions behind the physical and how the spiritual works in conjunction with the psychological. And people confuse all that.
All right, let's talk about
curses.
Strategic business curses. What are they?
I feel that I have a couple of clients that are in the industry, the movie industry and the music industry, and one producer had come to me with regards to a film she was doing and couldn't get somebody in the music department to get the project done so that the movie could get out on time or something. This is years ago. I don't remember all the details. But she came to me for the money and success power and the good luck power candles to unlock what was blocking the music department or the artist from producing the song. And it got done, and the movie was released on time, and it won, and it did quite well in the box office. But strategically, it was a planned, not attack, but event. And strategically, this woman needed something done specifically, and we got it done. If there was a curse on the opposite end, it's like, okay, I can't stand working with this person. I wanted to lose her job. And all of a sudden, they burn candles that are clean and have the purpose of upsetting the apple cart a little bit, but it's still the will of the universe if that person's going to lose their job or not. And I've seen people lose their job and somebody else get promoted because it was supposed to be what the candles can do is make it go faster if it's meant to happen. And then if there is a curse to be removed or a block, an obstacle, it's going to expedite that as well.
Who would want to curse a business? A rival, a competitor?
Competition, again, it's jealousy and competition. It's always about the competition. I've had lawyers go after other lawyers. I've had a superintendent of schools in Kansas come to me about some principal that they had a bone to pick. I mean, you'd be surprised. It's not just your everyday housewife or the mothers. I mean, I have had political figures, I've had celebrities, I've had school teachers. It's everybody in every walk of life wants an answer. Everybody wants help. Everybody feels the negative or wants to offset something. But when they strategically plan to hurt or harm for their own good, that's on them. I tell them what they can do to protect themselves. I tell them how it will work and that it won't come back on them, because most of what I sell is not harmful. It's not spells. But it's enough to release whatever hold this entity or energy has on the business, on the person, or on the family.
Spells seem nice and good. Curses seem evil. Is that pretty accurate?
Yes and no, because I think there's negative spells as well as positive spells. The curse is, I think, what's already been, like, hexed. It's a stronger negative. I would say yes. You feel like you're under the curse, under the veil, under the manhole cover. You can't get out. You're stuck, as opposed to a spell that can be undone. But spells can be just as heavy, negative, and dangerous if it's not done properly.
This is remarkable how some of these work. Kim Jong-un, who is the leader of North Korea,
right,
has gone missing, basically. Nobody knows where he is. He's, you know, he may be dead for all we know, but he's surely not showing up at sponsored events. So maybe they've tucked him away somewhere. I don't know. But the guy is nuts, and he's dangerous.
Right.
I'm wondering, if millions of people from South Korea, maybe North Korea, maybe the rest of our country, concentrated on doing the guy in.
Like a group consciousness?
Yeah, like a consciousness. Is that a curse?
No, I don't think that would be a curse. I think that would, in some ways it'd be a blessing, but I don't know that we're that powerful to really make a human being disappear. I really don't think it works that way. I think the group consciousness is usually most for positive outcomes and nothing negative. I don't think
okay.
It works for destruction like that. If we
wanted during World War II to do Hitler in, would that have worked? Because maybe somebody did. Maybe they use that power.
Theories as to what happened. It's hard to say what happened to Hitler with all the negative. Now he's one that.
Some say he made it to South America. Who knows?
Yeah, that's what they say, and he was still alive and all that. Just like Kennedy's supposed to be alive in a hospital somewhere. You hear all this stuff out there. But now evil. To talk about evil was somebody like Hitler, but also they say like he had syphilis and that his mind had been going, and yet at the same time the man bred evil and power. You have to remember, when it's all about greed, like oil, it's about greed. If it's about money, big business, your stocks, everything, everybody wants to have the biggest toy, the biggest house, and the biggest bank account, while the average person is suffering and struggling. But the power in cursing is still different than the greed, which is its own curse in its own way. But that's not the kind of curse I'm talking about. The curse where somebody literally has tampered with energy in a business or on a single human being, an animal, a family.
But it works.
It does work if the person is trained properly or has been given the right elements to create the negative.
See, that sounds like pure evil to me, Linda.
It is evil. And that's why the people doing the evil have a negative soul to start with. They just want to see harm and threats with other people because they have nothing better to do.
Why would God allow this to happen?
Why did God put the planet together the way he did? I think that this is for people to learn lessons, George. Everybody has to learn, you know, what right and wrong is. And if they're going to suffer and live in pain all their life and darkness, and that's something that they're going to have to figure out, that there's more to life than what they think, and just harming others because they're so unhappy.
But it does go around. There's no doubt about that in my mind.
Absolutely. And what goes around comes around. You know, the nicer you are and the more honest you are, the more giving, it comes back. You know, if you're just totally selfish or
and genuine. You know, if you have to do it from the heart. I don't think it works, Linda, if you do it for self gain.
No, you can't be narcissistic. And you can't be selfish. That's going towards the greed again, like at big business and everything that goes on with the, you know, in politics and world affairs and everything like that. But on a personal level, yes, the heart has to come in, which is why in the mind, body, spirit, as a whole person, you want to be able to have a heart while you're doing big business. You've got to have your intelligence met with the softness. It's like a walnut with the meat inside being real soft. You got the hard shell on the outside. We can't all be walking around like airy-fairy, high-energy, new-agey wonders. It doesn't work that way. But at the same time, you've got to be cordial with the people you're with. You've got to be companions. You've got to be compromising. It can't always be your way or the highway. It doesn't. You get in trouble that way. But that's not a curse. That's just, you know, learning etiquette and human relations.
Well, it sure is. I want to talk with you after the break about Mercury retrograde, you to explain that, some Ouija boards and the blood moons, and then I'm going to keep you an extra hour for phone calls, too.
You got it.
Okay, we will do that.
Tonight.
Tell us some more about your website, Linda. What do people see when they make that exploration?
LindaSalvin.com talks about my education from San Francisco State, University of Michigan, American Institute of Holistic Theology, my radio shows play, my candle line, which the wisdom is there, how to book an appointment or get an email reading, and other fun information.
I remember we talked about your University of Michigan episodes back 5 years ago. I went to the University of Detroit and had a great time there, too. What got you into Michigan?
A scholarship. Actually, I was applying for schools of public health across the country, and their program accepted me. I was at San Francisco State in 1975, and I was accepted to the program for epidemiology, which is one of the biggest fields now, especially with Ebola.
Oh, boy.
Epidemiology was just growing as a baby career and field back then in public health and CDC, and I was fascinated with disease research and investigation. So, in a way, it's the same thing with metaphysics. I get to investigate and detail people. It's the same kind of tool, but instead of just a disease and the population, it's now I deal with my own population. But I was into epidemiology back then, and everything changed after I was in the plane crash on company business when I had the out-of-body experience and became a psychic.
The plane crash. I want you to talk about that. If it's not too painful for you when we come back, would you do that?
Sure. Absolutely.
I mean, I fly a lot, and I sometimes just think what it's like if that plane is going down, the horror you think about.
I was on a Boeing 737.
Oh, you're helpless. Well, hold the story, because we're going to come right back. Linda Salvin with us here on Coast to Coast AM. And if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. And also, don't forget to grab those free apps in our store or in the app stores for iPhone or Android. Watch some television. Watch it on a show called Beyond Belief. Take a look at the trailer and take a look at it for free for 10 days. Simply go to this website, beyondbelief.com, It is that simple. www.beyondbelief.com. And go back and look at the past program that we did with David Wilcock. It is the highest viewed show there. David's got some magic. www.beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Salvin with us. Linda, Mercury retrograde. Explain that. And we're in it now, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We're in it now. It started on the 4th of October, and it will last until the 26th of October. And it happens three, maybe four times a year. It's nothing new. It's been going on since the day time began. But what happens is the planet Mercury, which represents communication, appears to be going in a backward motion. So computer problems might be more rampant. Communication problems, you're trying to get a hold of somebody and you can't get them to return your phone call or your email. Mail is delayed. Somebody says they're going to send a check. They send an empty envelope. You know, things that you don't expect, and yet it always deals with communication. Travel plans might be thwarted. The plane might be late. It's not going to crash. Satellites. I was once at the radio station and the whole satellite went out. You know, we were off the air.
That happens.
Weird technical difficulties.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen during a retrograde. It just seems that things are intensified during the 3.5 week period that happens on a almost a quarterly basis. And you can also find that love life and friendships often fall apart. Relationships that are not meant to be are going to dissolve and release, and think of the RE words. A lot of people reconcile, a lot of people return, a lot of things are rectified. And a lot of times we find, I had somebody email text me today, I hadn't talked to in 2 years. Not that I want to engage in this person, but they came up with a testimony and asking questions, and I choose to stay away from it. Talk about negativity. I don't want to go back there into the past, but I realized this afternoon that it's the retrograde that brought this back out of the blue.
Well, is retrograde a good or bad thing?
I think it's both. I think it can be both, depending on your astrological sign. And I'm not an astrologer, so I'm not good or the professional to verbalize all this properly. But I do know enough to get by that positive is that depending on your attitude, like we're talking mind over matter, you can overcome a lot of the adversity a retrograde is going to present. But we feel the anxiety, we feel the depression, we feel the lack of patience on a more intense level, where the negatives seem to be more pronounced. And it's kind of like pushing against the grain, and you just feel like you're in this hallway with some pins and needles that weren't there a week ago. And there's also called the shadow, which is about 7 days prior to the retrograde. So we would say the end of September it really started, and it'll follow into the beginning of November by the time the shadow of 7 days is over at the 26th.
So it's done at least before Halloween, huh?
Yeah, but we're still going to be in the shadow for Halloween, so we might have some weird things, but I think the kids will still have a lot of fun going out collecting their candy. But a retrograde just really means reverse, and it's not dangerous, although it's known throughout the occult and astrological community not to sign contracts. Like, my house is for sale, but if somebody came this week and wanted to open escrow, I would tell my agent to delay it, because I will not sign a contract during the retrograde.
Really?
The other side of the theory is, because the house has been on the market and we're in the process, it would be okay to sign the contract. But if you start something new, like, don't list the house for the first time during a retrograde.
And is Mercury retrograde only once a year?
No, 3 to 4 times a year, depending on...
Oh, that much. Wow.
Yeah. We had one in June.
And does that mean it's spinning the wrong way?
It looks like it is, but it doesn't actually reverse its orbit. It's impossible. How's the orbit going to go backwards? It just looks like that when you're watching Mercury, which takes 3.5 weeks to go around the sun, why does it appear to be looking like it's going backwards?
That's right. It's like a tire that sometimes looks like it's spinning backwards.
Even though it's going the right direction. Uh-huh.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about that unbelievable plane crash. When was it? What happened?
February 17th, 1981, I was on company business in San Jose. I left out of Orange County John Wayne Airport with my partner. I was working for an insurance company at the time in environmental health. And I was 4 years out of the University of Michigan grad school program at epidemiology. And my minor was industrial hygiene, which was in environmental health. And we took a plane up to San Jose Airport, where we were going to San Jose Hospital to do some ethylene oxide testing to make sure that the exposures in the hospital were within the range that OSHA sets as a standard for health practices. Mm-hmm. We were measuring the autoclave, which is where they sterilize equipment. And we told the doctors and nurses, do not open the autoclave door for 4 hours while we test this thing. And, of course, we went back at the halfway mark, and somebody had tampered with it, so it invalidated our work. So we packed up, and we went back to the to San Jose Airport, and my partner decided to get us on a earlier flight and changed the seating as opposed to from the back of the plane to the front. We were in the second row, second.
And you said it was a 737?
737, Boeing 737, 109.
All right, so not a little pedal jumper.
No, it wasn't. It was a regular commuter flight because we took off, I think, at 4:30 or 5:30 in the afternoon. And I had my first premonition, George. I'd never had premonitions. And I was sitting at the in the coffee shop, and as you're sitting in the coffee shop, you can sometimes look out the window and see a plane parked there. And I said, doesn't it look like it's going to crack there? And my partner looked, and he says, well, I don't see what you're seeing. You must be tired. But at the beyond the wing of the plane, I saw a fuselage or an exhaust settlement, like a line popped up. And I didn't know what it was. And then an hour and a half later, when we crash landed, the plane had cracked in half on the 17th aisle, right where I had the vision.
Jeez.
So we crash landed. We were taxing, or I guess they call it taxing in the air when they, you know, when there's other traffic and before you do, you're just kind of like waiting your turn to go land. And I remember looking at the steward, thinking he was really cute, and I was thinking, I wonder if he ever thinks about crashing. It's one of the risks of his job, because I was trained to think about safety. And why I thought that, I don't know. Next thing I know, we're losing control. We're going in for a landing. You know how the plane will come in, and sometimes they skip when the wheels make that
first hit,
and they come in comfortably. Well, this time we came down, we pounded on the pavement, went back up, came, and we skid, and we went back up. But what happened was we crash-landed to avoid collision with another plane taking off on the same runway. So the probability of all of us surviving was 2 billion to 1. It was done statistically that it was called a miracle flight. And it was Air California back then. They don't exist anymore. And we crash-landed. The engine fell off. The landing gear was stripped, and the plane crashed in half on the 17th aisle. And my partner kicked open the door, which was stuck, and I remember the stewardess, which isn't supposed to do this, came running down the aisle and said, everybody off before it blows. They're not supposed to panic, but we only had 90 seconds before we'd asphyxiate.
Flight 336.
Flight 336. Yep, Air Cal. And
they blamed the pilot, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, but I'll tell you, you want to talk about conspiracies and curses? I don't think it was a curse. I think God put me on that plane to change my life. I didn't understand it at the time because of all the fear, and I had an out-of-body experience that kept me 50 feet out of my body for about 4 months. But I got a copy of the FAA report, and so much of what was in that report was blacked out with like a marker that you couldn't see the truth of what they were reporting. And I think they were covering something up that they didn't even want the insurance companies or anybody to see, because I have a copy of it, and it makes no sense.
I've got a picture of your plane, and it's like somebody sawed it in two.
Yep, and I had the premonition. I'm getting chills because I'm repeating this. I had a premonition an hour and a half before takeoff that it was going to crack, and I'd never had a premonition in my life. I mean, maybe I want to go out with that guy, you know, that kind of thing, like intuition. But intuition, premonition, and psychic abilities are not the same.
I'm going to see if Sean, our webmaster tonight, will post that picture on our website.
Okay.
We'll get it to him.
I was in that plane crash, and coming down the ramp that looks like the river raft, I had this loud out-of-body experience. Some voice yelled at me that I'd never heard before, not my inner self and not my mom or my sisters or my boyfriend or my father. It was a voice that I choose to call God because it was so different and so loud, and it gave me this message. And then I remember running on the field, not knowing where I was going or what had happened. And I was, you know, the 405 freeway, and you probably know John Wayne Airport.
I know it all, yeah.
It's right there at the freeway. So I was facing the fence of going out, looking at the freeway, and then I panned and I saw the beacons with the ambulances. I panned again and saw the terminals, panned again, and I saw the plane on its belly, and I just stood there. I thought, oh, my God, I just survived a plane crash. And then out of the blue, some man came running around and said, we're alive, we're alive. And I just went, uh-huh. I was shocked.
And oh, yeah, that numbs you, doesn't it?
It more than numbs. It's post-traumatic stress disorder, just like the guys coming back from war. When you see something or experience something bigger than you can ever imagine, it shocks the system. But I know I had an out-of-body experience. I know it was my first of three near-death experiences because that's the day I became psychic. It's the day I became more spiritual. And I started questioning, like, something's different. I became different.
That's amazing. You're lucky to be here. And nobody else was hurt either, right?
Well, there were 35 of us that were taken to Tustin, Santa Ana.
No fatalities.
No fatalities, but we had injuries. You know, lungs were punctured and broken bones. I had neck, knee. Like, I remember going to the paramedic. He goes, what hurts? I told him my neck hurt. My knees were hurt because they were bloody from when I fell. And a couple other things I said. And then I'm split in half. And he said, Gurney. I don't understand the split in half. I didn't either. Nobody talked about psychic phenomena back then.
Do you still fly?
Absolutely.
Not afraid?
I get white knuckles at times, especially in a storm. I get very nervous.
Yeah. I want to be above a storm or below it, ready to land, but I don't want to be in the middle of it.
No, it brings back all of the memory of the crash, and I'll hold on. Sometimes I'll cry, and sometimes, like how the universe works, which is wonderful, when I really get out of the fear. One time I was having a hard time coming back, I think from Hawaii or Europe, I forget where I was, and a man sitting next to me says, it's okay, I'm a pilot. And he was sitting in the regular seats, and he said, not to worry, it's just turbulence. But who would put a pilot next to a plane crash survivor except God?
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I was on a plane once coming back from, I think, maybe Denver with the producer, Tom, and we hit some turbulence. And you know how you're dozing off, and then you hit that turbulence,
yes,
and it jars you, it wakes you up? Tom was dozing off, and it hit him like that. And you should have seen him. He was
white
his face
ghost.
White as a ghost.
Yep.
He was a ghost, and he looked like he just wanted to get up and jump out of the plane. Obviously, you're not going to do that.
No, you're not. But you know, when I think about some of the plane crashes that have occurred since I was in mine in '81, there have been horrible accidents through the years, and I could only imagine what some of these people are going through. Or even on the Hudson River, when those people survived that accident, the trauma, the spiritual, psychological, emotional changes that take place. You cannot go through something that massive and walk away. You might be unscathed, but the psyche, the spiritual, something goes on. I know for me, it changed me forever.
What did you think of the blood moon that we just had?
I thought it was beautiful. I didn't watch the eclipse because I wanted to sleep, but I've seen the pictures, and that's, of course, when the Earth is traveling between the moon and the sun, and so the cast on the moon is red, and it came in at a time of Sukkot for the Jewish holiday. We just had Yom Kippur, and 2 weeks before that was Rosh Hashanah, so and in Passover back in April, we had the other blood moon, so it's interesting that it's coming around Jewish high holidays, but we had the eclipse as well as the blood moon. So we had the lunar eclipse on the 8th? And an eclipse of the moon can often mean to people in astrology that things are ending and there's new beginnings. So it's like a new chapter. It was a finalization of something as the eclipse took place. And the beauty of seeing how red the moon glows, and you can still see the full moon in the sky tonight. It's gorgeous.
It really is. Now, and you're not an astrologer, you're a metaphysician. Big difference.
Yeah, oh gosh, yes. Astrologers, it's a science and an art in and of itself that I dabble in it. I know enough about the signs, but don't ask me to talk about the houses and the degrees and all that. It's just not where I'm at. But I know enough. I know that the energy from the lunar eclipse. Now, lunar is feminine energy, and solar is masculine energy. I don't know if people know that, but that's why people are called lunatics, especially during a full moon, because our emotions become so out there, and we're more sensitive. And especially like the moon children, the cancers of born in June and July, they're more sensitive and move with the moon's moods.
Well, you know, I was told by some EMT folks back in St. Louis, I would do interviews with them during full moons, and they said it is absolutely a fact that during full moons, crime goes up.
Crime and suicide.
Suicides go up. People do strange things. And
that's why they're called lunatics.
You know, the body is primarily water. I'm convinced, like a tidal pull, the moon, the full moon, pulls something within your body.
I happen to agree with that, just like you see the tides at the ocean. You know, when it's low tide and high tide, you can watch it. All of this is all part of the universe that we live in, and we're all part of the one whole thing, whether it's cursed or not, if it's positive or negative, if it's happy or sad, regardless of what it is, we all see the moon, we all see the sun, we all experience this, and we will all react in our own specific ways. Again, like, I'm a Capricorn. What sign are you, George?
I'm a Gemini.
Okay, so you're going to be affected by this particular retrograde, for example, which is in Scorpio, where I get along with Scorpio because water and earth are more compatible than, say, water and air. So you may have a more difficult, uneasy time during this retrograde with communications or maybe computer problems or your mail or something. And it may be a little bit more testy for you than it will be for me. But the next one might be more smooth for you, depending on what astrological sign the retrograde is in, that would be more compatible with you being an air sign.
Well, that may be.
Air and water have a different vibe than water and earth. You get along best with fire signs. Fire and air are the two compatible signs.
You have a public contact number.
I do.
888-509-1077. People call it. What do they do?
People call, leave a message. I do charge for my services. A lot of people are under the impression I work for free because I have a gift.
No, nobody can. Are you nominal?
I'm reasonable for the kind of work that I do.
Okay,
I'm competitive.
Good.
And the phone calls are lovely that come in from your show, but it takes me, you know, it can be a few weeks before we get back to everybody, but we get to every single person that calls, so they can go to the website and order online as well.
Okay, we're going to come back in a moment, Linda. We're going to talk about Ouija board experiences, and then we'll get into a full hour of phone calls as well. Questions about curses, you've heard us. Have you ever been cursed, for example? Has anybody ever put a curse on you? That does happen. And that's an interesting take, too. How do you know if there's a curse on you? How do you know? Anyways, we'll take your calls. Skype is up and working now, too. It's George97313. George97313. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.